So this week, the theme of the week, as you saw from the title of the retreat, is Sufism and Spiritual Ecology, which is very, very, very big. Big frame, and something that is also not new to many of you here. It is not something we're just talking about, this relationship between Sufism and spiritual ecology. It has been something that my father taught for many years, and I've been teaching for many years, how our own spiritual practice, our own mystical tradition, the Sufi path of love, is connected and needs to be connected and will grow even more in deepening a relationship with the earth in a time of great need. A time of great forgetfulness when the sacred of creation has been dominated and abused and polluted and destroyed in more ways than we can ever imagine or describe. And the importance of recognizing this crisis at its very core being a spiritual crisis, the very core of this ecological and the connected social, political, economic crises that are enveloping our world, at the heart of it is a spiritual crisis, a crisis of forgetfulness of the sacred nature of creation. And that there must be a spiritual response to a spiritual crisis, and for a mystic, for a Sufi, that involves at its very core remembrance of the sacred nature of creation as a manifestation of the divine, and that we must love below as above. This is a tradition which is both transcendent but also immanent. And this is something that I have been teaching about for many years, and in the context of how we go about our spiritual lives, I have always tried to emphasize the need to bring the remembrance of the sacred nature of creation, the earth, into the forefront of our consciousness. It should be with us each and every day. Just as we get up in the morning and we remember God, we also need to remember the sacred nature of its manifestation, of divine manifestation in earthly form, and how we interact with it every second of every moment of our lives, and it needs to be given the recognition and the attention that it deserves. And this week, what I want to do is really to delve deeper into the relationship between Sufism and the recognition of the sacred nature of creation. This is not something new to Sufism. Sufism has at its very core this fundamental tenet, the oneness of being. And of course, that includes everything, both what is created and both what is uncreated. Divine in all its manifestation and forms. And what I want to do is to explore how built into the very core of our tradition, this Naqshbandiya Mujaddidiya tradition of Sufism, in its practices and its principles, are ways of being in relationship with the divine in a very physical, embodied, present way. Just as this tradition works with accessing the uncreated worlds, this journey home towards truth, the essence of the divine, which is not in any form we can ever begin to understand or imagine, there is also this deeply personal, deeply intimate, deeply physical, and tangible relationship with God that is beneath our feet with every step that we take. It is embedded in every breath we breathe, in every mouthful of food we consume, in every interaction in our lives, there is this presence of God. One of the fundamental ways of orienting as a seeker, as a mystical seeker, is to look at both the awe of the divine, the incomprehensible nature of God and truth that we can never begin to understand, comprehend, the unknowable nature of that reality, the endless ocean in which we do not understand, we cannot begin to understand. It is unknowable, it is so huge, it encompasses everything. This awe of that, that lies at the heart of the mystical journey, the glimpse of that, that a seeker has, that then leads them on a journey, a long and difficult journey into what they do not know. They can never know. There is so much light, there is so much expanse, it never ends. You just sit in awe when you glimpse it. And on the other hand is the intimacy of what is revealed to the seeker about the sacred nature of God as it is manifest in the experiential way that we interact with it in our daily lives. As the nature of the beloved is revealed to us, and the capacity for experiencing it becomes tangible. The awe is intangible. It is so great. When you have those experiences, when you are taken into a place of an earth-shattering cosmic reality, which lies at the heart of so many mystical experiences, they can break you open. They can shatter you. They can leave you gasping. But they are not tangible. They are one side of the experience. Very rarely do you have a lot of these experiences. They are fleeting. It would be like being exposed to the sun, like being Icarus, trying to fly too close. You would just get burned. It is doled out carefully over time. As you see more and more of this vast nature of God. But once you are broken open as a human being, once a part of you has been touched by this awe-encompassing reality, there is a thread that is woven between that unknowable plane of creation to the one that exists around us. And then the intimacy and the love and the presence of the divine in the forms that are relatable to us become more present. It is not that we could not experience the beauty of the living world, a beautiful human being, a beautiful piece of art or music, this view. It is not that we can turn a blind eye to what is already an incredible, remarkable expression of beauty. But it's that we have a deeper way of being in relationship to it because there is a conscious presence of the divine in our ability to perceive and relate to it. The spiritual journey is, yes, about self-purification, becoming unhindered by ego, dealing with the darkness of ourselves, growing up as human beings, stepping into the true light of our own soul, living from the truest part of our beings, surrendering, deepening our experiences, of surrender. It is about all of those things. But it is also about being able to deepen the experience of experiencing the divine in everyday life in the forms that it is right there in front of us. You see, we can talk about the earth being sacred. We can understand it from a philosophical perspective if we trace back historically the role that the sacred has played in our cultures for time immemorial. But if we can't taste it, if we can't feel it, it remains a concept. It is not a lived experience. And the mystic is not just after concepts and abstractions. The mystic is after lived experience of both the awe and the unknowable and also the tangible. In Sufism, there is the majesty and there is also beauty, Jamal and Jalal. There is awe and there is intimacy. We work with opposites because they are so many ways to experience and participate in creation, in divine expression. And the mystic does not want only to lose oneself in the transcendent nature of God, but to also experience it in the imminent, in the everyday, in the mundane as much as the profound. And yes, this is very much a path which is an inner path. All mystical traditions, the emphasis is always on the inner journey, but it does not remove oneself from participating in the outer as well. They work hand in hand. As above, so below. As within, so without. And spiritual ecology, if it's going to be lived and embodied, not just a concept, but a lived experience, must weave those threads from the inner to the outer through one's own personal way of relating to the earth, bringing our capacity to remember God into the everyday way that we relate to the earth. And while our tradition does not work practically and tangibly with earth energies in the way that other traditions do, it is deeply embedded, deeply, deeply embedded, hidden almost. If you just think about the founding principle of this tradition as one example, the breath, and I will talk about this in more depth tomorrow. The breath, the foundational principle of this path, the first principle, it all comes down to the breath. The breath is not a transcendent experience. It can be, but it is first and foremost the primary way that we stay alive in this physical reality. An awareness of breath is not purely an opportunity to still the mind, to be attentive to the present. Yes, it is that. But it is much more. It is a flowing of energy from the world around us into our very selves. And if we're truly aware and conscious of what that means, it brings us into an intimate space of awareness between our relationship as a human being and to the broader non-human world that exists around us. It is very, very simple. It is really the core of almost every spiritual and mystical tradition in some shape or form, is working with and understanding the significance of the breath, of our relationship with the breath. It is embedded in these hidden ways. Remembrance, to bring a conscious relationship of the sacred to the physical experience of breathing, brings the transcendent and the immanent together, spirit and matter, conscious relationship of the sacred nature of reality into how we function as human beings on the most primal physical level through our breath. It is embedded. Solitude in the crowd, outwardly to be with people, inwardly to be with God. But it is not just to be with people, it is to be with the world that we live in. That we must bring the inner and the outer together, not lost in the outer, and not consumed only in the inner. We live in the world, we relate to the world, and we bring our conscious relationship with the divine, which lies at the center of our very being, into how we live our lives outwardly. There is a thread that is woven. A thread of remembrance, a thread of attention that exists always. The Sufis, yes, say that the world is in some ways an illusion. They don't use that language, but it is there. But what it really says is it is a reflection of truth, a reflection of a reflection, meaning there is at the core a root that is unformed, that is the awe that we experience, the unknowable nature of creation, of the divine that has not yet formed, that is at the root of every single thing that we experience, perceive, interact with, participate in. It is there at the core of everything. That is what we are seeking. That is what people refer to as truth. Not enlightenment, but truth. Truth is the core, what lies at the essence behind everything. And the living world, the world that we interact with, it is not an illusion. To me, that is a simplification. It's often called that, especially in Buddhism and other traditions. But it is trickled down sometimes in how it is expressed in Sufism. But I really think it is more a reflection. There is a root behind every tree you see, not just practically, but metaphorically. There is something that lies at the core of it that it emerged from. And the mystic seeks to go beyond purely what we can see and touch and taste and feel. We want to go behind that to see and experience what created what we can see and touch and taste and feel. To know that as much as we want to know and experience what we can touch and taste and smell and see and feel. And the intimacy that we can experience is when we understand the connections between those two worlds. We can understand and experience the connections between what we do not know, what we can never really know, this truth that exists behind creation and what we can see with our own eyes. Because there the presence of God is alive in a tangible way. It exists right in front of us. It is there in every form. And the Sufi must always remember God in every form. In every grain of rice, in every flower, in every human being. God is present in everything. And so while it was not called spiritual ecology, it was present and has always been present in how mystics perceive and relate to the world around them. They just didn't need to call it spiritual ecology. The sacred was not forgotten, not in the way it has become now. You know, one of the founders of our tradition, Bahauddin Naqshband, he was a potter by trade. But he also grew his own barley, milled his own barley, baked his own bread. And I doubt he was an anomaly, because for so many hundreds and thousands of years, we lived closer in relationship to the earth. You were a Sufi, and you were a potter, and you were a farmer, and you were a baker. And you lived in relationship with the cycle of the seasons. There was not the crazy modern reality that we live in, removing us from our capacity to be in relationship with the present and the cycles and the intimacy of what a world which is slower and simpler offers us. It was present. Remembrance of God was intimately part of every seed planted, stalk harvested, grain milled, loaf baked. The remembrance of God was ingrained with everything. Because at the heart, spiritual ecology is about remembrance. Remembrance and reverence. If we remember and understand that the earth is an alive, living form of the divine, if we remember that and it becomes ingrained in every aspect of our being, then what flows from that? A way of being that honors that, that respects that, that understands that. And that was at the foundation of cultures all over the world for thousands and thousands of years, until it was forgotten, until it was dismantled, until it was destroyed. But it was there, it was at the heart of how the mystic lived. It was ingrained. Everything is God. Everything is God. And so, in so many parts of our tradition, of our practices, of the principles, there are these keys, there are these ways of being, of breathing, of walking, of eating, of seeing, of listening, that bring us into this space of communion and connection with the intimacy of God that is present in the living world, that is present in our lives around us. And it is our duty as mystics to experience that. And this is not about trying to save the world, but it is just the very core of what a mystic has to do, which is to remember God in every shape or form. There are many traditions where one escapes from the world, where one goes to the monastery, goes to the cave, and removes oneself from life, takes vows of poverty, of chastity. Everything out there is not real. I am going to go within and find what is real. And they can work. They can take you to deep places of reality inside of yourself, and they have for millennia. They can bring you into that space of awe and bring you closer to truth. And then after many, many, many years, you come out of the cave or you come out of the monastery and you are a changed human being. You have connected to truth. You are what you might call enlightened. Oh, I don't like that word. Implies you've arrived somewhere. In Sufis, we know we are going nowhere fast. We'll arrive nowhere with nothing, knowing nothing about anything. But you would leave the monastery, you would leave the cave, and you would be a transformed human being, and you would begin to then relate to and see the reflection of what you had experienced inwardly in the world around you. You would see and perceive reality differently. You had changed. You would see the light of creation that was present because the veils of separation had been lifted through your practice. You had removed yourself so you could learn to see. You had removed yourself from the world so you could learn to see. But in Sufism, we do not remove ourselves from the world in order to see. We learn to see as we deepen our relationship to the truth behind creation. On one hand, we go deeper, on the other hand, we perceive more. Inner and outer grow, opposites, awe, intimacy, majesty, beauty. Our capacity to perceive light and see light and experience light gives us the capacity to then be in relationship to that light as it is manifest around us. It no longer becomes purely an abstraction, it becomes a lived experience. It's like when you try to describe love to somebody who's never experienced love. It is an abstraction. But once they have experienced love and it is alive in their heart, it is no longer an abstraction. It is a real lived experience felt in the body as much as it is felt in the soul. And the intimacy is like that. And for Sufis, it is experienced through love. Because our journey towards that awe, that unknowable nature of creation, is a journey of love. It is through love that we are taken to those spaces. It is through love that we are broken open. It is through love that we learn to quiet the mind and the ego so that we can perceive other realities. And once that love is present, then that love becomes a gateway for experience and relating with the intimacy of creation. You are not abstractly looking at a tree, being like, oh, that is sacred. No, you feel something inside of you. It is alive, it is real. The mystic wants to know God, not as an abstraction, but as a lived experience in every form. They say that the beloved is closer than the jugular. It is not just a saying. It is present, so close, not just in ourselves, but in everything around us. And as our capacity to love grows, our capacity to experience intimacy grows, our capacity to connect the world grows. The transcendent and the immanent become connected. And it is so important that they be connected because they were cut. And God was up here, and down here was a place of sin. And therein lies the roots of many of the problems we are facing today. And the mystic always understood the threads that existed from above to below. And that understanding lies at the heart of our journey. And it is so important not to get waylaid by our own personal spiritual journey. To remember, even from the beginning as we start, to remember that there is a much bigger picture at play. It is not just about us, about our journey, about our experience, about our desire for truth. That yearning gives one the inner power, the strength to want to begin and take a step on that road to truth. But it must be taken within the context of the understanding that it is all one, even from the beginning. It is all one. Oneness of being. We do not dismiss the world. We recognize what it is. It is a reflection of truth. It is a form that the divine takes. It is not the only form. And it should not even be considered a secondary form. It is a form. It is an expression. It is dangerous to think of truth better reflection, form, secondary. They come from the same source. It's like saying the trunk is better than the branch, the root is better than the trunk of the tree. They work in connection with each other. They must be perceived and related to as a whole. I was reading about Attar recently, and he had this very simple line, which is that the body and the soul are connected, and they are all part of the whole. Now, it's almost too simple to want to repeat, but I actually found it very profound. You know, Attar, this figure of Sufism, who, great poet and writer and saint, does not dismiss the body. It is not just the human body, it is the body in the broadest sense. The body and the soul are connected. They are both part of the whole. We must recognize this relationship between the soul and the body, transcendent, immanent, awe, intimacy, majesty, beauty, soul, body. It is through our body that we experience the nature of creation. Our soul and our body experience the sacred nature of creation. They are connected. They are a part of the whole. It's very, very simple. But just like spiritual ecology, just like Sufism, just like mysticism, at its essence, it's very simple. Everything is one. Remember God always. Everything is sacred. There you go. We're done. Everything is sacred. Remember God always. Everything is one. But the mystical journey is to understand that. Go on the journey to really feel that, to experience that, to be taken into the depths of what that really means. We think it's more complicated than that. In the end, it really isn't. Everything is one. Remember God always. Everything is sacred. It's very hard to live like that. But that is what is being asked of us at this time. That is what is being asked of the mystic, which is to actually be a mystic in the truest sense of what that means. That everything is one, remember God always, and everything is sacred. If everything that we do as human beings, as individuals, and then hopefully eventually one day as a society again, embodies those fundamental ways of being, everything shifts, everything changes. You can call it a pipe dream, if you will, but for the mystic, what else is there? Everything is one. Remember God always, and everything is sacred. What does that really mean? You see the enormity of everything. That your role is to remember that. And through that remembrance, the recognition of the sacred is then honored. And our relationship as human beings bridges one reality to another. That is the true capacity of what a human being can bring to this planet. All other creatures, they haven't forgotten God. It is present in their instinctual nature. When they breathe, they remember God. They don't need to have to add a mantra to the equation to do it. We have the capacity to consciously remember, connect these realities. Therein lies the potential and therein lies the calamity. And I think all those hundreds of years ago when Bahá'u'lláh was baking bread, harvesting his barley, growing his barley, he didn't have to think about the forgetfulness of God in the same way that we experience it. Yes, the world wasn't perfect, but the sacred nature of creation and how it existed in the foundations of cultures all over the world had not been destroyed to the level that it is now. I'm sure that there is not a person in this room who is more connected to the earth than, probably, than a person who lived 900 years ago, regardless of what they did. Because it was just there. They didn't have to try. Life was different. The world was different. The connections between those worlds was more present. But now the connections between those worlds have been severed, have been destroyed, have been forgotten. And the mystic must remember them, must live them. And when we stop to listen, just like we did now, you hear what is around us. How many creatures are there, just there? Even in the midst of our crazy modern world, the voices that are around us are too innumerable to comprehend. And just as we must understand this connection from above to below, the relationship between awe and intimacy, we must again remember that we are just one voice among many. Just one voice among many. And our ability to perceive what we hear when we are empty enough of our minds, when we have this connection between one world and the other, changes what we can hear. Because you hear where it comes from. And just as like we have forgotten how to see what is all around us, we have forgotten how to hear what is all around us. We just have forgotten almost everything. And there is such intimacy in what you can hear. Just as there is such intimacy in what you can see, when you have the ability to perceive it, when you have the ability to hear it. And the mystic has that capability, has that possibility. To quieten our minds, to awaken our hearts with love, to connect to this awe and yet experience the intimacy. And when one experiences that, when one really experiences that, it changes you. It becomes an expression of the divine that one has the deep ability to understand and experience in a very different way. And then remembrance becomes lived experience. And spiritual ecology must be lived experience, not abstract concept. Just like Sufism must be lived experience, not abstract concept. Because the only way to perceive the oneness of being is through remembrance and experience, spiritual practice and experience. That is not an abstraction. It is what takes one from abstraction to lived experience. And that spiritual practice that connects you to the oneness of being has the capacity to then bring you into the space of intimacy where one can experience the sacred nature of creation. It is no longer an abstraction, it is lived experience. Once you have experienced love, you never forget it. It stays inside of you. It is stamped on your soul. Once you have seen creation for what it is, it never leaves you. It is stamped on your soul. Once you have listened to something, really listened to something from beyond yourself, it stays with you. It is stamped on your soul. You are changed. Because it is real. And something becomes real when we engage with it for what it is, when we relate to it for what it is, when we perceive it for what it is. It transcends the mind, it is experienced in the body, it is felt in the heart, and it stays with you because it is stamped on your soul. And it is always through the simple, simple, simple ways of being, of practicing, that this transformation unfolds. It is not complex. One learns to be empty so one can hear, so one can be filled with something that is greater than oneself. And that includes what is above, what is uncreated, what is the love that flows from the divine. But it also includes the love and the experience of the divine as it is around us. It flows into us because we have space to experience it. Why do we meditate? Because it creates space so that you can be filled. That the boundaries of oneself become permeable so you can experience beyond yourself. Why do we remember God? Why do we say the zikr? Why do we infuse the breath with the name of God? Because it bridges ourselves to this broader reality through the primal nature of existence that is present in the breath. It bridges spirit and matter. It brings us from the oneness of being to the ability to perceive and relate to that oneness of being and experience the sacred nature of creation. Why do we work with silence? Because when there is silence, there is space and you can hear beyond yourself. Very simple things. Breathing, silence. If we learn to harness the simpleness that is behind each of these core aspects of what it means to be a mystic, of what it means to be a Sufi, we unlock these keys between this world as we perceive it, the world of divine command, the world of light, the world of awe, and what is impossible to understand and imagine, but just to try to bask in an experience knowing we will never understand it. We unlock those keys between those worlds. And because the Sufis' practice is not just relegated to a few hours in the morning or the evening, or now it's a few minutes in the morning, minutes in the evening for most of us. It is constant, it is ceaseless. There is this constant presence that brings us from one reality to another that is possible. To remember God with every breath, with every attentive part of our being. We are always able to be in this space of relationship between the worlds. I was reading a little bit about Faisal Ahmad Khan, who is Guru Maharaj's teacher, Grandfather Guru. Vaisabh used to call him Grandfather Guru. And he was a great saint. And I didn't know this, actually. It was just this last week I was reading that he was very big on the importance of remembrance while eating, while cooking, while sleeping, while working. He kind of covered all the bases. Died in 1904. Before every mouth of food, you remember God. While you are cooking, you remember God. Before you sleep, you remember God. When you go to work, you remember God. And he outlined this. So nothing I'm saying today, or will say this week, will be very new. It is part of an ancient tradition of integrating the remembrance of God into every aspect of our lives. Using our awareness, our attentiveness, our breath, our silence, our physical actions and activity, our interactions to bridge spirit and matter. The sacred and the oneness of creation. And our role as intermediaries, as human beings, through our power and capacity to be in a space of remembrance. That is what we can offer. That is what we must do to be and live in a space of remembrance.